Ready? Okay. Good evening, and welcome to the regularly scheduled November 15th meeting of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Trustees. The board met previously in closed session. We discussed one item of anticipated litigation regarding RPG&E application number 16-08-006 before the CPUC, and we conferred with our labor negotiators regarding unrepresented employees, the superintendent and assistant superintendents. It was discussion only and no action was taken. Do we have consensus on the order of business? Okay. We are seeking approval of two sets of minutes. First, the minutes of November 1st, 2016. So I have a motion by Mr. Questenberry, a second by Mr. Buckman. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That passes unanimously. Followed by approval of the minutes of 11-10-2016. So I have a motion by Mrs. Sheffer, second by Mr. Millar. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That also passes unanimously. Next, we have our student representatives to the board. I can't remember which way I went last time, so we'll just start with Caroline Pettyholm from San Luis Obispo High School.
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
So for San Luis Obispo High School news, in sports, the winter tryouts have begun. So I just came from water polo, so they're going well. Also, the cross country from fall season, actually, their state finals are Friday. So I believe we have Callum Bolger running, and I think Matt White as well. So two very, very dedicated runners. In academic news, this is our finals week. So we have finals tomorrow is our fifth period final, and then Thursday is our first and second, and then Friday is third and fourth period. Last night we had a final study night at the library from 6:30 to 9. It was where our librarian put on, basically had some teachers come in if they needed to do tutoring and had snacks and hot chocolate and a good environment for studying, basically, with computers available as well. We also have our Poetry Out Loud competition coming up. Last year, I believe Sarah Mozacek was the winner, so hopefully we'll have some good competition there. In ASB news, last Thursday was our annual movie night. We hold one. We started last year. Last year we showed Ferris Bueller's Day Off, and this year we showed Napoleon. It was good. No one ditched school after that. But yeah, we showed Ferris Bueller's Day Off, and then this year we showed Napoleon Dynamite. So it's kind of a nice ease into finals week. Today we wore blue to support National Type 1 Diabetes Support Day. So there's a lot of students at our school that have type 1 diabetes, so we want to show support for them. Today was the last day for our canned food drive, and so a bunch of the proceeds and the canned foods go to a local organization that helps needy families for Thanksgiving. So we brought in a bunch of canned foods regarding cranberry sauce, marshmallows, brown sugar, a lot of the Thanksgiving type foods. The senior shirts have been ordered, and the forms are in, so that's exciting for the seniors. Also, last Friday, we had a senior academic barbecue, which was where all seniors had a GPA of a 4.0 or higher. They were invited to a free barbecue where they got a free burger, chips, and a drink, so that's exciting for them. Also, 2 weeks ago, our Powder Puff teams competed, and the juniors and seniors went against each other. The juniors, unfortunately, lost. It's okay. And the sophomores beat the freshmen, too, so that was pretty exciting. And also, our cornhole tournament is still going on. It will go on until next trimester, I believe. And in band news, last but not least, they placed first in their competition at Pismo Beach Band Review, first overall, which is incredible. And our drumline placed second overall, and they were able to play with the Cal Poly Band at the most recent, I believe it was a football game that they played at. So that's pretty cool. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Millar.
How did the girls' golf
team?
Oh, girls golf. We actually
they were pretty amazing.
We placed first in league this year. Last time we did that was 2014, so 2 years ago. And then they traveled to CIF. I unfortunately couldn't go with them, but they traveled to CIF the 2 weeks after the league final, and I don't actually know what they placed in CIF. We did not get top 10, though. I know that. But we traveled to CIF, which is the first time in a long time, which is pretty fun. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next, we have Zoe Ashworth from Morro Bay High School.
Hello.
Oh. Hi.
Okay. So for our Morro Bay news in sports, this Friday is our cross-country finals, and boys soccer kicks off this week with their tryouts. For ASB, on Thursday, we have our annual Morro Bay High School talent show, where a lot of talented kids are going to be performing this year, and everyone's looking forward to that. And then Monday, we started Morro Bay High School Sports Spirit Week, and each day is a different athletic theme. So, like, today, everyone wore, like, sports jerseys and dressed up as an athlete. And Monday, there wasn't any dress-up day, but each day there's been an event going on. So Wednesday is going to be arm wrestling, and then Friday we have jazzercise in the quad, which we've done before, and it was really, really fun. So for our seniors of the month, a continuing tradition at Morro Bay High School is in partnership with the Elks Club, and it honors two students each month chosen by the faculty by their academic excellence, outstanding citizenship, and involvement in the community or the school. So our November seniors of the month are Audrey McDonald and Connor Hamp. And December seniors are going to be Kendall Schimmer and Raul Hernandez. And then all the honorees attended dinner at the Elks Club. Last board meeting, it was mentioned that Morro Bay High School put on a political informational forum at lunch on November 3rd. And we wanted to bring it up again because the seniors did such an amazing job with it in getting kids to get more into politics and going on with this election this year. And it was really cool as a student to see that at my school happening. KSB News was there, and as well as Don Ortiz Lake and Jordan Cunningham, and the students got to interview them, which was really cool to do. We actually had a local hero this week, which was really cool. A few weeks ago, Morro Bay High School student Jose Aguilar was walking home from his football game and saw that there was a fire at the Estero Bay RV park. He knocked on all the doors of everyone's houses and made sure everyone got out safely, and so he was appreciated with an honorable actions card. And that's all that's been happening. Thanks.
Thank you. I don't see any questions from the board, so as always, we appreciate that you come and share with us what's going on at the high schools. You're welcome to stay, listen to the discussion, participate if you'd like to, but we're mindful that you have other obligations as well, particularly with finals, so please feel free to leave at any time with our thanks. Thank you. The next item is the 2015-16 audit reports for SLCUSD and CCSFA, which is the Central California Schools Financing Authority.
Thank you.
Julie Lang, hello.
Thank you. Yes, tonight we're presenting our audits for both San Luis Coastal and, as you said, CCSFA. For the year ended June 30th, 2016. And I just wanted to introduce Matt Miller, who may look familiar to you. He has taken over as our lead auditor and was here, what, 7 years ago, I think, as our lead auditor as well. So he's familiar with the district, and he's going to explain some things about our audits. And I just wanted to also bring to your attention that toward the end of the audit, if you looked through it, you'll see that there were some recommendations this year. All of those have been addressed by the school sites. We had one at the district office level for our CalCards. We've set up a new CalCard policy, sent it out to all of our holders, closed out any open cards. So those things have all been addressed. And with that, I will turn it over to Matt.
Thank you.
Thank you, Julie. Good evening, everybody. I will start out with the district audit. And I'll run through just some key areas just to point out what maybe has changed in what we focus on and what maybe will bring to your attention of some interest, hopefully. In the audit report, the first opinion, which you've had over the years, is pretty much your main opinion. Now, this opinion has changed like in the last 4 years, but basically the main opinion here is talking about responsibilities that both myself as the auditor and also you as the district are responsible for the financial statements. And then the key opinion paragraphs is basically what we consider a clean opinion, that we've said everything has been adhered to in accordance with the Governmental Accounting Standards Boards. And with GASB this year, on page 35, those were the information that was provided in this report that basically directs what has been implemented by the district on accounting for pensions. And this was an update to GASB 68. So there are new GASBs that were implemented this year by the district in accordance with the requirements. And everything was in accordance with it. One of the pages I want to just point out to, just to give a quick recap of the activity for the year, and that's on the MD&A. And the MD&A is put together with our assistance along with Julie, and she's along with the rest of the district personnel. But what we do is on page 9, in the MD&A, it's always showing comparative information. And just wanted to highlight some of the key things in that. Overall, the total assets went from $149 million to $154 million. Some of the key things in there, as you move down through the liabilities, you'll see the liabilities went from $124 million to $137 million. Now, once again, this is all of your assets. This is all of your liabilities. This is all of your funds, everything wrapped together. The GASB 68 is now, it's in its second year, and if you look at what the difference is there, is you went from about $62 million to $73 million. And I was trying to gauge this within all of my clients throughout California, and it seems to have a pretty consistent pattern where that liability has gone up. Now, once again, the rates have been increased on what you're putting into STIRS and PERS, and also the state is funding it. So at some point, I don't know when, but it might be leveling off and maybe it'll start reversing. So our hope. That was the game plan. Overall, your net position went up just about $1 million from $15 million to $16 million. And those are some of the key things within the financials when you wrap everything together. Overall, when you turn to the following page on page 10, the change in net assets for this year went up just about $1 million. And once again, that includes your depreciation, your capital expenditures, it's everything, your liabilities and all. So when you look at your actual general fund balance on page 24, just when you're looking on 24, you're from a fund standpoint on where you have just basically your cash, your receivables, and your payables, not all your fixed assets, not your liabilities. The net change was $1.7 million for the general fund.
Can I ask a quick question on page 24?
Yes.
Thanks. So up at the top, we talk about revenues,
mm-hmm.
and we talk about local control funding formula.
Right.
So that's what the district's getting now from LCFF, or is that our...
Yes.
Is that our...
That's your actual for 15-16 fiscal year.
Okay, and so our revenues from basic aid...
It's all wrapped in the local control funding formula.
Ah, okay. Thank you. I was thinking, well, that's a lot of LCFF. Thank you.
Yeah, and overall, for all the funds wrapped together, just on from a cash in, cash out basis, you were $3.4 million on the positive side. In addition to the report, we have also the remaining three opinions. And one is on internal control, one's on state compliance, and one's on federal compliance. And for the internal control testing, that was what, as Julie referred to, we had some just very minor, and we consider them insignificant, but they're in the management letter standpoint. In order for them to be a significant deficiency, we would have them as reportable findings within the report directly in their appropriate section under either internal control, state compliance, or federal compliance. And we did not have any significant deficiencies to report in this report. So I just wanted to clarify that what was mentioned in the back are management letter findings, which are less in scope and aren't required to be brought up as a significant deficiency. So that's that. In your federal compliance area, there's been a big change in what is required for testing, and it's now considered a uniform guidance. And it's basically the federal government has changed some of the rules. And so you are required to have a single audit if you're $750 million in expenses, and you, $750,000, sorry, you had $4 million in expenses. So you did require a single audit. And then within the single audit, we are required also to look at the high risk and low risk, and we did our testing. And once again, we did not have any findings within your federal monies. We will be reporting that directly to the federal agency within a 30-day period of probably within a few days that have just passed. So I'll be getting that done real soon. And otherwise, the last thing to mention is on page 75, the requirement, the state requires a 3% reserve for a district your size, and you have met that, and you've had very stable trends throughout the years of keeping the reserves at a positive. So I will end my presentation on the district report, but I'm happy to answer questions.
Do we have any questions? Okay, I think that we're a group without questions.
Okay, good.
And this is a fine audit.
Well,
and so
I appreciate all the help that we get. This is without the assistance of all the staff and Ryan's group and working with Julie. And I mean, we provide things ahead; they get us stuff ahead of time through electronic means, and so it really helps the process to give a much more of a thorough audit, and nothing has changed. It's even seems like we have to test more under certain guidances. So we do appreciate all the cooperation,
Merrill?
And the assistance. So,
Mr. Buckman,
yes.
Thanks for the other clarification. I just thought it was there. Okay. So there's often times when you've stood up or someone else has stood up and said, and then there's ASB. And so I didn't see that at all in here. Or we do.
There's a few. There's a few in the back.
Okay.
But Julie's been on top of that.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks.
So,
Mr.
No.
Pinkerton?
Yeah, I just wanted to remind the board that last year we actually went out for an audit, you know, looking at all audit firms, and actually stayed with VDT in terms of doing the audit, but Matt came on board. So even within staying with the same audit firm, we did have a new kind of lead individual in going through this. So it's good to just make sure that you have that kind of, you know, a different face every few years type of thing. So I just wanted to give a kudos to Julie and her staff. So just reaching out, working with ASBs. I know that there's some new ASB software that they're using at school. So we're constantly trying to, you know, make sure that people are, you know, doing what they need to do financially. And then the last part, too, is we also have the Measure D.
Right.
So financials and performance bond, too, that we'll be presenting to the to our CBOC. And so just, you know, those are also kind of things that they take care of as well.
Yeah. And then
okay.
The last is the authority, which is the Central California Schools Finance Authority. And that is really where you have, if you want to look on page, and this will give you a good visual of it. On page 5, these are the assessed revenues or the assessed tax revenues that are passed through between the two districts. And as you can see, over the last 5 years, it's been pretty steady at around the $250,000 level.
Okay.
And so this report pretty much is laid out exactly as the district report. It has the main opinion. We look over to make sure that the transactions are being recorded and basically divvied out correctly in accordance with the guidelines. So that there's been no exceptions in this report in addition.
Okay, and I guess it's important to note for the public that when you find things related to ASBs or things that are occurring with funds at the school sites, typically would you say it's a matter of not knowing how to accurately report things? There are no shenanigans
right
going on.
Right. Yeah. When we look at areas of controls, we look at basically that there's good separations of duties, there's timelinesses that things are getting done, there's reconciliation process happening, and then within the student bodies, there's some uniquenesses on when they're doing their fundraisings. And so those are some of the things that happen to either through turnover or, like you say, just them being busy, that we do find those problems. Now, if there was something that elevated up to a higher level, we would be mentioning that in the report, that there was something else. And we have not had that here at all. So
okay.
I'm glad we keep it that way.
Terrific. Well, then we thank you very much for your work on our behalf. And Measure D is being presented, I think, to the CBOC. And Julie and your staff, thank you for your hard work and your cooperation. And we'll move on then to the next item.
Thank you. Appreciate it. And everybody have a good evening. Bye-bye.
The next item is correspondence. And at the time the agenda was prepared, there had been no correspondence received. Item 6.02 is public comment. We have one request to speak. Formal request to speak, but then if anyone else would like to speak, you certainly are welcome to. We have a 3-minute limit.
And our speaker is Chris Reed.
Good evening, board. My name is Chris Reed. I'm here on behalf of myself and my wife, Alexis Thompson. Most importantly, our son, Bodie, who attends Baywood Elementary. He's part of the preschool program there. And I've never made public comment before, but I just felt compelled to do so. The program has been exceptional in every possible way and has vastly improved my son's ability to be social with other children. And it improved his interest in just letters, numbers, and all those things. And, we always... You hear on the radio or read about how important preschool programs are for preparing children to seamlessly move into kindergarten and first grade, and to see it firsthand has been really astounding. And so just on behalf of my family, I wanted to come here tonight to thank the board and the district for providing that program, and in particular wanted to give praise to Fiona Lloyd Moffitt, who's the teacher there. Her professionalism and warmth and just dedication to the job, I've never seen in another teacher, and I've never seen in fellow professionals. It's just, it's amazing. So I just wanted to give her praise tonight, and again, thank you all for the program. I know that we are entering uncertain times, and I know that priorities will be set, and I know it's not a required program, but all that aside, it's been amazing to our family, and it certainly has been amazing to the other families in the program, so thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to address the board in public comment? I know who you are, but would you identify yourself?
Right. My name is Linda Villanueva-Quesenberry, and at this time, I would like to thank the board for nominating me to be on the Slo County Committee on School District Organization. I'm very honored for your support, and I just wanted to say thank you very much. And also I'd like to thank Ms. Rogers and Mr. Quisenberry and Mr. Unger, Mr. Prater, for supporting the Los Osos Community Coalition. We're moving forward, and it's a new thing for Los Osos, and I really appreciate your attendance at the meetings and just really supporting it. So thank you so much.
Thank you. We appreciate your hard work in the community and your willingness to serve on the county board.
Thank you
very much. Okay, seeing no additional public comment at this time, we'll move on then to the business and budget update. Mr. Pinkerton?
Well, there was an election last time we got together, and so fortunately for us, two key propositions passed, I think, for school districts across the state of California. The first was Prop 51, which basically was a kind of a state matching bond funds for us. Right, I got it right, 51 facilities, yeah. So there's kind of twofold. One, potential modernization dollars for the district, as well as some CTE funds. So it's really going to help us in terms of going after those funds to help us with our Measure D dollars and kind of expanding what we're able to do and move forward. So Mr. Palazzo has already been meeting with Liz Moore to kind of get the program in line. We actually have a meeting tomorrow with Julie Avnet to really push and move forward, in particular with the CTE dollars, to get whatever we can and to get in line. So those are, you know, really exciting things. And the other one's Prop 55. So a few years ago, Prop 30 passed, which placed a tax on high-income earners, and so that money gets funneled straight to education, basically, Prop 98. And so for us as a district, we receive, I believe the last couple of years have been about $1.4 million of those funds. So I'm not positive yet how the Prop 55 is going to kind of be laid out for districts, in that I know that there's some health care, there's some other things that are tied into this new proposition. But I'm just happy to say that hopefully with our first interim, we're going to be able to put a dollar figure where it was a zero in 2 years from now. So that's something that long term, when we look at our projections, it's definitely going to help. And so, you know, thank you to the voters, I would say, you know, throughout the state that helped get that passed. We're also have been in negotiations with PG&E, you know, over the past few weeks, and so continue to kind of press forward to do whatever we can to help us in this situation with the reductions we have to make. And so hopefully we're going to pull something together soon, which will, again, also help us in that financial position. So we'll be updating the board as we learn more.
Okay. Mr. Unger.
Just, I don't know if you mentioned it, but just a reminder that Prop 55 is a temporary tax, and it expires after 12 years.
Dr. Prater.
Yes, I would like to use my section of the educational services update to introduce our personnel director, Mrs. Newland, and she'd like to say a few kind words about our negotiations process with our teachers association.
Thank you so much. I'd like to invite up Craig Stewart, the president of our teachers association, and I really wanted to praise Craig for his leadership. I think it's important to note that Craig is an excellent teacher at San Luis Obispo High School. He teaches English to 10th graders, and he has children in the district. And as a matter of fact, I was leaving his classroom, it was about 6 months or a year ago, and someone stopped me and said, "Are you Craig's wife? I just want to tell you how wonderful your children are." And I said, "Well, I'm not his wife, but I do spend a lot of time with Craig because of our roles here." He is super thoughtful about those people that he includes in leadership, and as a result, I've seen quite a shift of the SLCTA and the group that he's included. He includes people that have the historical knowledge, along with new voices as well, and he's thoughtful about having people from all different levels and from the coast and from the city there as a voice for the association. He's super transparent. It was one of his goals coming into office, that he really cares about, a lot about his members, and you can totally tell that he cares about his members, and so he's super transparent about that. One of the things I've appreciated this year with Craig is that I asked if each time he sends something out to his members, would he mind including me in the communications so that I know what he's saying, and I did the same for him. So we were kind of, you know, we were working together in that process. Also, he's very respectful of administration. He meets with Dr. Prater on a regular basis. He meets with me on a regular basis, and very respectful and thoughtful. But he's also not afraid to stand up for what he believes is right. You absolutely know that Craig is going to stand up for what he believes. And whether that's something that he's going to stand up to me about something that we disagree on, or whether that's he's going to stand up to one of his members on something he disagrees on, or whether he's going to stand up to Dr. Prater, it really doesn't matter. It's what he believes is right, and he will do that. So later on the agenda, you're going to see that there's a tentative agreement, which is really a great, wonderful thing on there. I think both sides, and definitely thanks to Craig and his leadership, he chose Lori Decker, 10th grade English teacher at Slo High, with the classroom right next to his. So she couldn't get away from this wonderful responsibility of being negotiations chair. And Lori has been absolutely fantastic to work with as well. Again, thanks to Craig for his thoughtfulness on bringing somebody in that would be able to work with a new negotiating team that he chose. And in the past, we kind of had a pattern in the district that was we ended up at mediation. And this year, we made a concerted effort that we really wanted to end up with a negotiated agreement that we both felt good about. And I think you'll see that later on the agenda. So I just wanted to thank Craig so much for his leadership and let you know what he's done for the association this year.
Thank you.
Can I say something real fast? Yeah, thanks. That's really nice. It's been great working with Kristen, and I think, you know, the key to success in these kinds of things that has borne out in my year and a little bit of doing this is you get the right people in the room and really good things can happen. And I think that on your side of it, you guys have got great leadership with your district superintendents and assistant superintendents, and I've worked really hard to try to get the right people in the room, good thinkers, you know, people who can work well with others, can think about other points of view, and it's worked well, I think, for negotiations. I think it's working well with our evaluation committee, and it's about to start working well, hopefully, with our upcoming stipend committee, which is a feature of our new negotiated contract as well. So I think we've had a really good time working together, and I'm looking forward to more of that in the future. So thanks a lot.
Thank you very much. Okay, was there any additional Ed Services update? No? Okay, then Measure D update, Mr. Pinkerton.
So they're about to pour some concrete in the pool next week in Morro Bay High, so that's very exciting. If you've been out and checked it out, it's a big hole in the ground. It's a big pool. So it's good. It's very exciting in terms of being out there and seeing it. And again, just to remind the board, I signed a $30,000 bill for Morro Bay High students to use the Cayucas pool this year. So those are the types of things that, you know, when we talked about the cost benefits of having our own pool, and even though there's cost to the pool, it's going to be offset by what we're already paying out in other ways. So that part's a positive thing. Just really excited about upcoming projects. I know that we had our study session, we hope to be, with Mr. Holcomb's help, kind of finalizing our contract with our design build team, and so our hope is to bring that to you December 13th so that we have that contract in place and we can begin the next phase of projects. We will be putting together a whole kind of list of other things that we're doing at other school sites as we continue some smaller modernization projects to some of our elementary sites, and so we'll be bringing that to the board as well.
Okay, thank you. Seeing no board comment, we'll move on. We have public hearings. The first being the district's interests for CSEA negotiations. Mrs. Newland.
So it's a requirement that we have public hearings before beginning negotiations. So you will see the district's interests for CSEA negotiations, CSEA's interest in starting the negotiations process. And then you will also see that same public hearing process for SEIU, the district's interest to start negotiations, and SEIU's interest to start negotiations. And those are the next four items. So each one has to be open for public comment for the public to be able to weigh in on this process.
Okay. Thank you. So I am opening then the opening for public testimony, the district's interests for CSEA negotiations. Is there anyone from the public that would like to comment? Seeing no one then, I will close the public hearing for that item. I am opening the public hearing for CSEA negotiation interests. Is there anyone who would like to speak to that? Seeing no one, I'll close the public hearing. I'm now opening the district's interest for SEIU negotiations. Is there anyone who would like to speak to that? Seeing no one, then I'll close the public hearing. And finally, I am opening the SEIU negotiation interests. Is there anyone who would like to speak to that? Seeing no one, then I am closing the public hearings as noted.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And later on the agenda, we'll be back to approve them.
Okay. Moving on to the discussion portion of the agenda, item 9.01, elementary reading update. And I believe that's Diana Jones, our English Language Arts TOSA.
Good evening. Thank you for having me here today. My name is Diana Jones, and I am the elementary teacher on special assignment for English Language Arts, and I have the pleasure of being here to give you an elementary reading update this evening. I think I point this way. Is that right? Okay. I'd like to take us back and encourage you to remember about 9 years ago when we brought the comprehensive literacy model to San Luis Obispo Unified School District. In this model, we introduced the workshop model to our classrooms, where students were given opportunity to become self-autonomous learners and practice their new skills on a daily basis. This model worked really well for our district and was research-based and was working well all over our country. So when the Common Core came about, many publishers started creating materials that mirrored the effectiveness of this model. When that happened, we were able to start piloting curriculum and materials in our district that matched both the Common Core and this model that was working well for our students. And you were part of that last year when we had our instructional materials adoption panel that got together 40 members of our school district, of our community, parents, that were able to make a recommendation to our school board to adopt the Lucy Calkins Reading Units of Study. And with that, we adopted last spring on a day where the IMAP committee decided to do what was best for our students, not what was easiest for our teachers. And with that, we were able to adopt this rich and rigorous program, which required our teachers to be deep, thoughtful thinkers of reading. So what I'd like to do in the next couple minutes is give you a glimpse into our classroom and what this reading workshop model looks like with our new reading program. And while these slides play behind me or off to the side here, I want to tell you just a little bit about this curriculum. So go ahead, thank you. I always figure that we want to see what's going on with our students, right? This is why we come to school and to work every day, is to see our students engaging in rigorous, thoughtful work and becoming very deep thinkers around reading. So this curriculum and our program itself is a workshop model, which allows teachers to be facilitators in learning and is therefore inherently student-centered. As you look at these pictures, what you'll see is a lot of reading, very robust opportunities for students to put eyes on texts in just right books that challenge them with their new skills that they're learning every day. This idea of voluminous reading is research-based for many decades across the country, and what this program allows our students to interact with. With Eyes on Text, we know that our students have to have skills that they're practicing. So what this program allows for us to do is to have mini lessons on a daily basis and then let our students go off and utilize those new skills in very authentic ways in flexible grouping. So you'll notice that we have students who are reading individually, that are reading in partnerships, that are reading with teachers in small groups, and where teachers are allowed to have the time and opportunity to meet one-on-one in conferencing to reach students where they are and to help coach them to the next level of reading. This program also allows for a spiral of skills and standards. So you'll see students using these new skills across the curriculum in social studies, science, math, reading and writing, and you'll see them doing this with fiction early in the year, and then having the opportunity to practice and come back and apply it to nonfiction later in the year. These word-solving strategies that students are using are applied to all different types of texts. You'll also see ample opportunity for word work, which is students engaging in the foundational skills of letter-sound correlation, as well as Greek roots and inflectional endings. This program allows for reading and writing to go hand in hand because we know it's a reciprocal process, and that's how we're going to grow the most literate readers and writers. Another thing that I want to point out is that we have students in all of our classrooms reading print books as well as digital texts. And this is something that we're able to do with all of our Chromebooks and iPads that we have in our elementary classrooms that help us grow readers and literate citizens in the 21st century. As we do this, we need to be cognizant of having books that are of a wide variety. Texts that allow students to access various topics, reading levels, and genres, so that they're able to apply these skills in all of these ways. It's important to note that we have quite a culture of reading in our classrooms and in our schools and across our district as well. Reading is not an hour and a half that we spend separate from everything else, but rather through this program, we're building this community of readers. So coming up here, we're going to stop on a slide where you're going to see two boys reading. And I'm going to give you a moment to read a quote from a teacher. And it's important to know that as I asked for these insights into classrooms, teachers were getting ready for report cards and conferences and very busy. But I got inundated with videos and phone calls and anecdotes and pictures. So I'll give you a moment to read this one right here that I think encompasses a lot of what I want to share this evening. And I know that Mrs. Long, if she knew that I were to share this in a formal setting, would have used fewer capitals and fewer exclamation marks, right? But I asked her if I could share this here tonight because I thought that it really showed the enthusiasm that teachers are feeling. This is hard work, and it is paying off. This is why teachers come to work every day, is to see our students have the excitement for learning and to become robust, well-rounded citizens and thinkers. I also like this quote because it shows what a social activity reading is and becoming a literate student is. These boys are spending their own free time pushing each other. And lastly, it shows what we incorporate in all of our learning, which is the growth mindset. This may not be the book, it's not yet his book, but he knows that by working hard and by having the support of his teachers and his peers, he will get there. So that is first grade, and I want to show you a quick clip of the other end of the spectrum, which is fifth grade. And something that happens in the Common Core standards in reading in fifth grade is there's a large jump in analysis that we're asking our students to do. We ask our students to do a lot of analysis in reading all the way throughout the Common Core. But from fourth to fifth grade, we're asking our students to start analyzing between two texts, or sometimes even more. So this is a big jump. And what's happening in this fifth grade classroom is that students were given some questions that were developed by the teacher and by our curriculum around a novel that was read as a whole class. They're going to analyze the type of questions that they're coming across. And then in the model of gradual release, after having this whole class practice, after having some partner practice, they're going to go on and create their own questions for their individual reading. And we were worried that the sound may not work, so it may not happen here tonight. Okay, so I'll just let you know what's happening. The girl on the left is looking at different questions that are coming up and saying, well, I think this is a level two question because it only asks us to consider one perspective. And then the girl on the left is acknowledging her peers' thoughts and then building upon them, which is some really high-order thinking skills going on. And so she's saying, yeah, but if you were to look at multiple sources, it might be this. It's okay. We'll go ahead and skip. I think we missed their part. It's all right. Ms. Holmes, it's all right if we skip to the next slide. I think I gave you a pretty good synopsis of what was going on. All right, so my hope. So my hope in doing that for you was to give you a little bit of an insight into the great work that is being done in our classrooms by both our teachers and our students. And we know that the only way that this can happen is by continuing to build agency and give support to our educators. So last year, when that brave group of people got together and said, this is what's best for students, let's adopt this curriculum, we got together and said, what are the supports that need to happen to make this implementation successful and most powerful for our students that we can? And with that, we came up with a model that is fashioned after a successful model in math that we've been using for the past few years, and that is to leverage the leadership of teachers, so teachers leading teachers. And we have a teacher leader team that we call our literacy leads, and that's about 2 to 4 teachers per grade level who get together on an ongoing basis to deepen their understanding of quality reading instruction and get to know our new units of study better. So this summer, they spent quite a bit of time doing some work to get ready for the rollout of this curriculum. And one of the things that happened is they came up with a 3-year implementation plan that connects our reading and writing programs together. They also were able to come up with some content vocabulary to focus on at each reading or each grade level, and some planners for teachers to help them understand how curriculum was set up and how to plan. And of course, we always want to provide opportunities to model what we're doing in our classrooms and for teachers to have some professional learning around platforms that we're using. So we're sharing this on Google Classroom as well. Not only were we able to do some leadership learning opportunities within district, but we also hired consultants from Columbia University's Teacher College who were able to come in and show us how the curriculum is organized early in the summer, and then later in the summer come back and help us problem solve and figure out how to set up our school day and instructional minutes to be the most beneficial for our readers. The ongoing support is also being delivered through our student-centered coaching model. So we have instructional coaches at each school site who are learning about the reading curriculum and reading instruction with me on an ongoing basis, and then going back and supporting teachers in planning and instruction at school sites. And as I mentioned, the literacy leads meet on an ongoing basis. So right now in our classrooms, you'll see teachers and students engaged in Unit 2. Our literacy leads are working in Unit 2 with their students, which is around nonfiction reading. Concurrently, they're also looking ahead to Unit 3 and doing work on Unit 3 so that on December 5th, they can get together in an after-school meeting with their grade-level colleagues and tell them what they've learned and prepared for implementation of Unit 3. So it's a model looking ahead for collaboration. You'll see here they're also working with Sharon Haupt at the IMC to find texts that are appropriate, and for myself to create some learning targets and some possible evidence of learning. If you think back to the comprehensive literacy model, we also know that word work is important. And so Mary Zurm is leading a group of approximately 35 teachers in a pilot this year for an additional word work program that we know will augment the curriculum that we've adopted. And one of the joys of my job this year has been collaborating closely with principals and coaches to figure out what ongoing PD is happening at staff meetings and admin TCT time to help build that agency of educators around reading. And it doesn't stop at school. We know that the partnership between families is incredibly important in helping our students achieve. So through the LCAP, every school site has been budgeted money to have a family literacy night this year. And they have been amazing. At these family literacy nights, there's community coming together around reading. And if you have not been able to attend one, there are still about 7 left this year, and I invite you to be part of that because they're really a great evening. I've shared quite a bit that we're doing in literacy so far, and it's only the end of the first trimester. So as we head into trimester 2, as I mentioned, we're headed into nonfiction texts. And something that's really amazing with this program is that we have all of our students across the school engaged in some sort of reading around nonfiction texts at the same time. It also complements the writing that they're doing. We're headed into information and opinion writing. We know that literacy includes both reading and writing, so we're able to really utilize our time in that way. As I mentioned, our grade literacy leads are preparing for Unit 3, and on December 5th at Bishop's Peak, kindergarten through sixth grade teachers are invited to come learn from their grade level colleagues about Unit 3 and look ahead into character development, which all of our students will be engaging in. And I invite all of you to come to that if you're able as well. And lastly, I am providing a morning PD for all of our kinder through fifth grade teachers, looking into what assessment tools are embedded in our curriculum to see how we can cozy up next to our students, notice what they're reading, and figure out our most powerful instructional moves next so that we can help coach them to the next level. So in closing, I'd like to take this opportunity to thank all the teachers for their hard work that they're doing in classrooms every day. To thank you for putting these materials in our classrooms and in our teachers' hands, and providing the opportunities to continue to build our educators so that they can continue to build our readers. And thank you for the time here tonight to highlight this great work. And I'm happy to answer any questions that you have.
Mrs. Jones, Ms. Rogers asks your forgiveness. She just had to leave a little bit early.
Thank you.
But I see that Mr. Unger has a question for you.
So I just want to say that as I go around to the different schools, how impressed I am with what I'm seeing in the classrooms, especially I tend to go in the mornings and I tend to see the reading programs. Mm-hmm. There are several things that just strike me when I go into classrooms. The first is that the students are working independently or with other groups of students on their reading. They're reinforcing each other. They're doing exactly what you said. They're asking questions. They're thinking about the text. The teachers are working with typically small groups of other students. But what I love is that although they're working with small groups of students, the other students know what they're supposed to be doing, and they are working. It's not playtime. It's so exciting to walk into classrooms and see that happening. It's just, it is amazing. And then the other thing I wanted to talk about at the Family Literacy Nights, and for anybody that hasn't been to a Family Literacy Night, you really ought to go to one. I went to the one at Monarch Grove. The students came in their pajamas. They had milk and cookies. There was a quick, about a 15-minute lesson from the reading specialist at the school about things for parents to look for text for their kids, and how to know whether a book is appropriate or not. There was a reading time, and then every kid got to take a book home. It was absolutely wonderful, and I applaud what you guys are doing.
Thank you. I'm glad that you were able to make it to those events.
I love the language that the first graders were using to be able to say to another first grader, that book is just right for you, or that's a not yet book for you. Mm-hmm. That's just beautiful. Dr. Prater.
I just want to, I'm a huge fan of yours, Diana, and I watched this unfold over the last few years, mm-hmm. and what I just want to commend you on, you'd mentioned something earlier in the presentation about how the teachers decided to do what they felt was right for the kids, even though it meant more work for them. And that didn't come just out of the thin air. That decision came because of the process that you used with your team and with the principals and the teachers, the process you used that took many, many months to get to. And I just, I'm super proud of the work you've done and with your team, and our students and teachers are benefiting from it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm honored to work with who we work with. We have amazing people here in our district to support each other and our students. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Sheffer.
Yeah, I just wanted to follow up on what Dr. Prater said. I was speaking with an elementary teacher recently who indicated that it is a lot of work to level the books for each individual reader, but doing that provides an opportunity for deeper understanding of each student and where the particular student is in his or her reading abilities and skills, mm-hmm. because the teacher has to really spend a small amount of extra time determining which particular book should go in which particular bin for each student. And I spoke with someone else Sunday who said that she had just returned from her classroom and had had all the... she was getting ready for a new unit and had books spread all over the floor of her classroom, and she sat on the floor to level the books for each particular reader. And it didn't take her a lot of time, but she said it also gave her the opportunity to go through each student's bin and discover all sorts of things in there. But it is a bit of extra time. I don't want to downgrade it. I'm sure it's a substantial amount of extra time, but well worth the thinking on the part of the teacher to really consider where each child is. So thank you.
Thank you for honoring that work that our teachers are doing. They do put in the extra time to make sure that our libraries are organized. You saw some pictures of some beautifully organized libraries, and these allow for students to choose books based on their reading level, like you mentioned, and then also teachers level part of their library and then leave part of their library by genre or topic so that students have the opportunity to pick books just like we pick books. So that they're finding those just right books, and then they're also picking books that are of interest. If they like basketball, they're on basketball, or because their friend said to read it. So that is very important. And I do appreciate you pointing out the learning that is happening at the same time. We are always growing as educators, and this is a very complex process to teach reading, and we're continuing to do that through this curriculum and through our program. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Jones. And we are moving on to approve the comprehensive school safety plan. And we have,
Hi, guys. Thank you so much. So I'm here to talk about comprehensive school safety plans, everybody's favorite subject. Next slide.
So, Chris, before you get started, I just want to point out to the board. So last year, so kudos to Chris for going through updating all of our kind of the need, the template for the safety plans, pulled all that together. If the board remembers, we actually brought those to you in the spring. And there were some missing things, some school site approvals, some principal, those types of things. So he has diligently been working with the sites, updating, getting everything together to ensure that they're all kind of ready to go. And we're actually, and I think Mr. Buckman actually pointed this out, we're actually really early in terms of being able to bring these to the board at this time. So
yeah, the deadline's March 1st. We jumped on it right away this summer, asked the principals to revise their school safety plans to be consistent with updated templates because there's slightly revised policies, there's new information, we've updated some procedures, so we wanted to make sure that everything was updated completely. So that is what you see here today. We also wanted to make sure that everything was consistent between all the plans. So that was one big addition that you'll see this year is every plan is, I think, very thoroughly and completely and similarly completed for you to review. So first point is student staff safety is our number one priority. School site safety plans are outlined in Education Code 32280 through 32289 if you have any interest in reviewing Education Code. Some of us have more interest in that than others. I'm looking at you, Mark. 3 years ago, each school site had a very different comprehensive safety plan document. So what we wanted to do was make sure that everything was compliant with Education Code and also thoroughly vetted and reviewed. So that's what we're establishing a process for, is making sure that the comprehensive safety plans, as outlined and required in Ed Code, are thoroughly and completely done in addition to vetted and audited. We have a standardized document, and that's what I've done is created a standardized document for everybody to fill in, and I'm trying to make it as simple as possible. So my goal next year is to put it into a Google form so that everybody can just enter in only into the interval parts and the editable parts so that there's no confusion or mixing up of the different templates, which is something that we've encountered in the past. And the final step for that process is seeking the approval of your guys' approval of these safety plans tonight. One more slide. I wanted to talk quickly about some of the safety-related work that we're doing this school year. One big change is that I've updated all the school safety plans to be compliant with updated intruder lockdown protocols that would be described as, you know, that public safety officials call run, hide, fight. I follow a company's recommended protocols, and the company is called ALICE, which is an acronym for a thought process about how to deal in a situation in which there is a person who is causing or intending to cause harm on a school site. So that's what we've updated the intruder lockdown protocol to respond to, is following the ALICE protocol, which is basically an acronym for alert, lockdown, inform, counter, and evacuate. And it's a protocol not to be followed in that exact order, but it's a manner of thinking so that teachers can use their best thought process in order to evade the problem if they can, or to counter if an intruder comes into their classroom. I've coordinated this response protocol with all three local police agencies that we work with in our school district. So that's the County Sheriff's Department, Morro Bay PD, and San Luis PD. And we're working to also going out to every school site and making sure that staff are trained in this new protocol, because it really is a radical change from the simple lockdown, close your doors sort of response. It requires a certain degree of flexibility in thinking and adaptation given a certain set of circumstances. And another thing that we're doing this year with some Measure D money, I believe, is we're making sure that all the schools have updated broadcasting systems. So that's part of the new phone installations that are going into every school site, is making sure that they're updated and can broadcast to every area of the campus. So some school sites have not had every area of the campus been able to have a broadcasting system alerting people to any given emergency. So that's a big thing, I think, that we're investing in this year. And so with that, I would just ask that you guys hopefully have reviewed and adopt the school safety plans.
Mr. Quisenberry?
Yeah, I did look at the Morro Bay school site safety plan, and I was very amazed at the amount of detail in the safety plans. It shows a lot of hard work and a lot of thought, and it's a very different world than when I started teaching about 40 years ago. So it's you know, the biggest thing then was, could we get everybody to respond to the fire drill and out the building in, you know, in an organized fashion? And this requires a great deal more work on the part of teachers and students to make a site safe. So thank you very much for the work.
Absolutely.
Mrs. Sheffer.
Chris, could you please describe the training that at each site that all staff and teachers, everyone goes through to make sure that everyone understands the protocols and the safety protocols and procedures?
Sure. So I sat down last spring with the three school resource officers that are represented from the three different police or law enforcement agencies, and we talked about we reviewed the protocol as it was adapted. I talked a bit about the training that I attended by the group ALICE. And they went back and met with a representative from their department that is usually a trainer at their department and talked about how to incorporate this ALICE protocol with their run, hide, fight response plan that they recommend for any generic organization. And so the idea was is that the law enforcement agencies would tailor a training, about a 30 to 45 minute training, to talk to school staff about how to follow this improvisational protocol. And so we've gone out, each one of the police agencies have sent a representative to go to each one of the school sites and talk to the staff about how this protocol would react and answer any questions about given scenarios. So like I said, it's a 30 to 45 minute protocol or a training. The one thing about this is like any kind of preparation, you can't just do it once and leave it because you have new staff coming in. So the idea is to update this on an annual or semi-annual basis, and then to also insert maybe probably more comprehensive training like we did at San Luis Obispo High School 3 years ago. So that's a goal.
Okay. And then what about, as you meant, you referred to new staff coming in. What about our substitute teachers, substitute staff, classified staff filling in?
Yeah, so some of the sites we've been able to hit all of the classified staff as available. It's hard to get everybody in the same room at the same time, but the intent is to try to hit to every employee group. So next I would reach out maybe to bus drivers, to food services. Those would be all goals of people to hit. I wanted to start the beginning of the year talking to every school site. So we've made sure to make sure to get all the school sites dealt with first, and then we'll move on to the other employee groups as we're as they're made available.
Okay, thank you. It's a big job. I really appreciate your efforts. This
you forget
so
that there's 800 employees in the organization sometimes.
And
so
sort of going from place to place or not present every day.
So yeah.
Thanks, Chris.
Absolutely.
Mr. Quisenberry.
I just have a question. In the digital age, do classrooms each still have a folder with the safety plans in them, or are they all available on a laptop or what have you?
Every site should have a PDF file, and how they store that and dispense that is really a matter of a site level sort of determination. I think the most important thing is that when teachers are responding to an emergency is they have a very clear set of very simple directions. You don't want a folder that you have to wade through in order to look at everything. So our most important safety protocol outline is for teachers in the classroom is the flip chart, which every classroom has. It's a very simple, people need paper in a given scenario like that. So you need a hard copy rather than going to the computer and wasting 5 minutes trying to find it in an obscure folder in the W drive or something. So every classroom has a flip chart. Everybody knows where that flip chart is and should be able to refer to that pretty quickly and easily.
Mr. Buckman, you have a question?
Yeah, well, actually more of a comment. I just wanted to thank Chris for getting this into a format that's really going to be easy for the staff and the district. And the other thing I think that's important is it's now common across the district.
Mm-hmm.
And so parents with kids in different schools, teachers that are traveling, anybody that's moving around, it's going to be the same at each site. And I just think that's critical to a good planning to have it all integrated. If there's no other comment, I'd like to make a motion to approve.
I was just going to ask if there's anyone from the public who would like to comment or ask a question of Mr. Deller. Seeing no one, Mr. Buckman.
I'd like to make the motion to approve the comprehensive school safety plans.
And Mr. Quisenberry is the second. We have a motion by Mr. Buckman and a second by Mr. Quisenberry. All in favor? Aye. And aye back there.
Right.
So it's a five.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Dowler has a huge undertaking. He did that very well. You're back.
I am back.
The next item is the approval of the 2016-2019 tentative agreement with the San Luis Coastal Unified School District.
As mentioned earlier, we appreciate SLCTA's leadership on this and urge you to approve tentative agreement for a three-year contract, which closes out the contract until 2019.
Thank you. And we will go to the public before we come to the board. Does anyone in the public like to make a comment? Seeing no one, are there any comments from the board? Ms. Sheffer?
I would just move to accept the agreement.
I'll second that.
Ms. Sheffer is making the motion. Mr. Quisenberry has seconded the approval of the tentative agreement with the SLCTA. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. It's unanimous. Thank you very much. And are we going to see more of you now? Later. Okay. The next item we have is a 9.04, and this is the topic is the Diablo Canyon Nuclear Power Plant Closure Impact Report number 7. Mrs. McGrath.
Good evening. We have conducted a series of reports on the impact of the Diablo Canyon Nuclear Power Plant, so tonight I will present report number 7. Feel back up just one, Kim. Thanks. Tonight we will look at school size. We have looked at different areas that have made our district kind of stand apart from other districts that we've contributed to the revenues that we receive from Diablo funds. And because of the revenues, we have been able to keep small schools. Tonight I will discuss our current enrollment numbers for each school site compared to other SLO County schools. I will also mention some of the advantages and disadvantages of small schools, as well as some factors to consider before we would ever consider repurposing these schools. I also want to make very clear that repurposing a school site takes a lot of thoughtful consideration. We would not take that decision lightly. It would mean a lot of time, a lot of strategic and thoughtful process before that would ever take place. So let's begin looking at our elementary enrollment numbers. You can see here in elementary that in our coastal schools of Baywood, we have Del Mar and Monarch Grove, our coastal average is about 360 per school site. When you look at our city schools of Bishop's Peak, Hawthorne, Los Ranchos, we have our largest elementary school being Pacheco at 585, Sinsheimer, Smith, and then Teach is our smallest elementary at 182. Where the coastal average was at 360 per school, our city average is around 399 per school. These numbers were taken from our Seabeds reporting day in October, just as that is obviously the numbers change on a daily basis, and so we picked the time where we have to officially send in our enrollment numbers. The next slide, you can see we looked at our secondary enrollment numbers. So on our coastal schools of Los Osos Middle School and Morro Bay High School, you can see in the 600s and 800s. And in our city schools, we have Laguna Middle School, where it's only 7th and 8th, different than Los Osos with 6th, 7th, and 8th. But at Laguna with only 7th and 8th, we have 732 students. Our continuation high school of that October date had 53 students. And at SLO High School, around 1,400. little tricky to see there, huh? That's not great, but so let's talk about it. So when we looked at our SLO County schools, I looked at doing some comparisons and numbers. I will say that you can't. It's not always apples to apples that we're looking at here. So let me explain to you a little bit. When you start in Atascadero, you're starting with a total enrollment of around 4,500 total students. When we look at the number of elementary schools, we have 6 elementary schools. I did put an asterisk there because if you think about Carissa Plains and Creston were removed from that because they're such small, it really skews when you're trying to look at an average. Those sizes are so small, and with Atascadero, it's just a large geographic area. So with those geographic schools kind of outside of the normal calculation, we did remove those. So if you look at their elementary ratio, it would be about 392 to 1. If you then look, they have 1 middle school, so they do have 6, 7, and 8. Again, it's a little, not quite apples to apples because every school is comprised, slightly differently. But theirs would be 836 to 1. They also have 1 comprehensive high school, and 1,333 to 1. If you look at Lucia Mar, you can see with about 10,000 students, they do have 11 elementary schools, and you can see their ratio. They do have 3 middle or junior high schools, and you can notice there the ratios. When we're kind of drawing some conclusions from this, you can see that really the discrepancy seems to come in the elementary ratios. And then when you look at the number of middle and junior highs as well as the number of comprehensive high schools, you can almost always contribute that to geography. Right, Atascadero has 1 town, 1 comprehensive high school. Lucia Mar services, Napomo as well as AG, and then they have New Tech High as kind of an outlier there. But it's, basically around what you need geography. And kind of like with what we need in San Luis Coastal, we have our city area and our coastal area. So you can kind of contribute the 2 middle schools and the 2 junior highs to that. The difference really comes in elementary. So when you look at those elementary ratios, you can see that we have fortunately been able to keep our school sizes pretty small when it comes to that. The next chart, we kind of looked at what are some of the advantages and disadvantages of having small schools. When we think about small schools' advantages, relationships are one. We value relationships, and often the staff knows all the students well. There's really a neighborhood identity a lot of times when you have a small school. There's traditions. There's big links to the past, and people identify with that school, and they have family members that went to that school, and they really feel connected to it. There's opportunities and access for students, for teachers to engage with them at individual and small group levels, for people to understand their learning needs, their social needs, emotional needs at really a specific level. There's also, we've been able to have these regional considerations. So you can see that coast versus city makes some of those determinations. When we think about, there are some disadvantages that come to small schools. There are additional staffing costs. So you think about additional administrators, especially classified. Often you really don't think of additional teachers being needed because those students would be somewhere and they would need teachers. So really it's more of an administrative and classified cost. With small schools, we often have more combinations, right? A lot of times, if you only have 2 classes per grade level, a lot of times that kind of forces you into additional combination classes. From a teacher standpoint, sometimes there's limited access to collaborative opportunities. If you only have 1 other person teaching that grade level, you only have sometimes 1 other person, or if in a high school, let's say at Morro Bay High, you may have no one else teaching that topic. So sometimes it limits your abilities to collaborate. You might also have more extra duty responsibilities. You think at some smaller schools, they still have to accomplish the same things, but with less people to do that. And there's sometimes limited opportunities for secondary classes or program offerings. Sometimes Morro Bay may struggle to offer the exact same thing that SLO High would just because of the number of students able to take that pathway. And finally, just some of the key factors to consider and things to think about. Before we ever even considered looking at school sizes, we would really need to do and complete a thorough demographic study. We'd have to really look at where is future growth? Where is development taking place? Where is movement taking place? Where are students moving in? What is happening in the areas? We need to really consider our funding model. Right now, being in basic aid, it actually in a strange way benefits us to have less students. If we, and maybe probably when we, reach an LCFF funding, it is advantageous for us to have additional students. When we're funded by per student and per attendance, we're going to want to look for ways to draw students in. Facilities, definitely something to think about, maintaining, preserving those existing sites and potentially developing them and having the facility available for additional growth. And finally, there's been a lot of change around charter school reform, and it's really a changing landscape when it comes to charter schools. So it's something that we definitely needed to consider before we would ever look at doing any type of a change or repurposing related to this. So that is our report number 7 on school size, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Is there anyone from the public who would like to make a comment on this subject? Seeing no one, I'll bring that back to the board. Mrs. McGrath, I do have a question for you. So at 585 at Pacheco, is that at full capacity?
Facility-wise, mm-hmm. Is that at full capacity? I don't think so.
What would full capacity look like?
I want to say 650 or more. I mean, it's okay. Again, we've become accustomed to having PTA rooms and music rooms and science rooms, and you know, if you had to grow out a school type of thing, those would become classrooms. Mm-hmm. So it just depends on what you consider capacity or, you know, having those other types of, you know, rooms available. So, but that is the one school that probably is at max capacity in terms of if we took all those programs and we had it, that's definitely the school that's kind of, you know, grown the most, the biggest that we have in the district. We actually had to this year take the kind of YMCA room and build a wall to make room for an additional classroom there. So it's...
And yet when you're there, I mean, when I volunteered there in the kindergarten mm-hmm. classroom, it doesn't feel like it's a disproportionate number of students to... It just feels like a good ratio.
Yeah.
I mean, it feels like all the students are being attended mm-hmm. to quite nicely. I'm sorry, Dr. Prater.
Yeah, I would just say... You have to use the microphone, I would just say that it's at its maximum capacity given the facilities that we have currently on that site. So if there was a interest to grow it, we'd have to bring facilities onto the campus. It would be a totally different decision point at that point.
Mr. Unger?
I think one of the interesting things when I look at the same chart you're looking at, the elementary school numbers, is if we look at Hawthorne at 432, not many years ago, in the early part of the century, Hawthorne was 180 students. And we actually had discussed whether we were going to be able to keep it open or not. So I think it's quite interesting. And I'm excited to see that Hawthorne, which is really truly a neighborhood school, is about 432 students. And then also to remind people that when we look at 182 students, it would really be double 182 students, so what, 364 students, because it's only 456. So it looks smaller, but in fact it's not a full grade span.
Yeah, and I would add that later on the agenda we're going to talk about a demographic study, and the reason for that is Hawthorne is our fastest growing school. And it's because of some of the decisions made by the city of San Luis Obispo with high-density housing. So the apartments that have been built on South Street and within the downtown area happens to fall in the Hawthorne attendance area. And so we have been pleasantly surprised, but it's been a surprise nonetheless that Hawthorne is growing at the highest rate of all of our schools at this point.
Are there any other questions for Mrs. McGrath? This is for discussion only, so thank you very much.
I just wanted...
Oh, Walter.
My own. I'm glad to see that we are putting this information out there because of one of the Diablo Canyon power plant meetings that I attended. There was the rumor about stuff. So hopefully, folks, if you don't hear it from us, then whatever the rumor is not correct. So thank you for doing clearing that up.
Thank you, Mrs. McGrath. Next, we have an approval of appointments to the State Water Contractors Advisory Board. And Mr. Pinkerton.
So, yeah, I thought it'd be a little weird for Anthony to appoint himself and come up here and talk about it, but we actually, there's kind of an informal group that meets, and we're contractors of state water, so we take state water, and the one school that we have that does utilize state water is Bellevue Santa Fe. So Anthony has been kind of the informal voice for the district on that board, and so I guess they want to get together and kind of make it a little bit more formalized, and so that's, you know, kind of the purpose today would be to have the board appoint Anthony. Rick Stimson would be his backup. And anything else you want to add to it? What's the, in terms of the board itself, where do they meet? How does it get together? What are their...
Well, we meet in the basement of the county building. It's kind of an informal meeting. But basically, you know, we're a very small user of in relationship to the other agencies that are part of that. And so, you know, it's really just our ability to find out what's going on, what kind of allocations of our contracted amount that we're going to get this year. But again, we're probably the absolute smallest user of state water, whereas you're talking to cities like Pismo Beach and some of the other bigger agencies that are, you know, serving a whole community with their water, and we're serving one school. So, but it's just good for us to know what's going on, what kind of allocation we can expect, and to just make sure that, you know, the district's interests are being, you know, heard at that group's meeting.
So we're asking the board to approve appointment of Mr. Plaza for that committee tonight.
Mr. Unger, your
do you want to go light to the public first?
Oh, sorry. Is there anyone in the public who would like to speak to this item?
So I have a question for you. I thought Morro Bay got state water, because remember we had that water wheeling lawsuit a few years ago? Not. I mean, our schools don't get it directly, but am I wrong that the city of Morro Bay gets state water?
Well, yeah, so we're not the lead agency getting that state water. So at Bellevue Santa Fe, we are the agency that's receiving the state water, has the contract directly. We're getting the quote-unquote state water through the city of Morro Bay.
Do you have any, Mr. Palazzo, do you have anything to say about conservation on this board, or is this not for that purpose?
Yeah, this really isn't. This is more about how are we getting our water. There's a lot of other meetings we have that talk about conservation, but, you know, we do mention it, but it's not the focus at this point yet.
Understood. Mr. Millar.
Well, despite many misgivings, I was going to move appointment of Mr. Palazzo.
It wouldn't hurt my feelings if you know.
Yeah.
I will second.
We have a motion by Mr. Millar and a second by Mr. Quisenberry. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
You have a mandate.
Better
you,
him
Mr.
than me.
Plazzo.
Perfect. Thank you, Mr. Palazzo. You know, the next one in terms of kind of goes along with our last presentation is Dr. Prater. This is just something, you know, to bring to the board. We don't necessarily have to make a decision tonight. It's just, I think for us, you know, Julie Avenatt actually did a study about 2 years ago in terms of looking at our future growth and demographics. And that was all to kind of come in line with us being able to get state funding in particular for the bond. In terms of if a state bond passed and modernization and facilities. And so it was important for us to kind of have Julie do that. Now, the problem with Julie's data is it's not specific enough. It doesn't have kind of the computer map, the Google map that shows every single home in you know, our district boundary area, and where, you know, you can click on Bellevue Santa Fe, or you can click on Bishop's Peak, and it'll show you on the map where all of those kids are. And so it's just an, I think for us in terms of looking at future planning, I mean, like Dr. Prater said, hey, we're seeing some growth in Hawthorne. We're assuming that growth has become because of some of the new housing tracts around that area. Is it? Is it not? We, you know, I don't really necessarily know that based on the data that we have in terms of, yeah, I guess we could go look at student addresses in our, you know, our student information system and try to by hand do that. But this basically, this program takes all that data and shows it to us. So we would able to really be able to look and see what that looks like. There's a portion of the contract, too, which it talks about, where they will actually go out and they'll do the same in terms of going into the county, talking to the developments, and kind of doing some of that future planning for some of the new housing tracts that are on board as well. So, again, it's just it's a much more kind of in-depth look at our boundaries, our demographics, where our kids live. And so, it, you know, when Dr. Prater and I looked at it, when they walked us through it, and basically the reason why we looked at Decision Insight was, you know, we kind of asked John Gray and Ron Bennett in terms of, hey, you guys are around, you've seen kind of what programs are out there, what's good, what's bad in terms of districts. And so they recommended this group to us. And so, again, we sat down, we went through the program with them, they walked us through it. And it, you know, if we're going to ever have a discussion about looking at school size or looking at kind of district and where we're headed, you know, do we need to potentially, I mean, think about purchasing a property in South San Luis Obispo? I mean, we actually may want to grow a school in that area type of thing. So it just seemed like a positive thing for us in terms of looking at something like this, this type of software. And so they have kind of a, they actually gave us a 5-year kind of rollout plan. It, of course, is cheaper each year that you do it. You know, we can do this on a 1-year basis, look at it, see how it works. You know, I had just opted for the 3-year in terms of, okay, this is, you know, in terms of if we're going to look at it, we'll probably look at it for a couple of years. I'm assuming that if we have a budget review committee that they're going to maybe have questions about these types of things, about our boundaries, about where students are. And so being able to have this kind of firsthand knowledge quickly available for them, I thought would be a positive thing. So that's kind of why we looked into it. It's why it's here for discussion tonight with the board. And I hopefully can answer any questions you might have.
Is there anyone from the public who would like to comment on this matter? Seeing no one, I didn't see who touched their light first. Mrs. Sheffer.
A quick question. I'm really interested in future planning, you know, looking down the road a bit. Will, and you partially answered my question in mm-hmm. terms of their going and meeting with planning and talking about what kind of development will be done, will they be able to drill down enough to say, look at where future development may be occurring, what kind of housing? Will it be geared towards families? Will it be geared toward retirees? Will they be able to take a look at trends as to who is moving here, the age mm-hmm. groups, that sort of thing, to really anticipate growth as it will affect our schools?
So, I mean, I think they can do that to their best ability. Right, I think it's still a little bit of a guessing game in some ways, right, in terms of looking at it. What we can do, though, the nice part, I mean, it's kind of scary in terms of the information that they have available for us that we can use. In that you literally can click on any parcel in our district, and it'll tell you who lives there, how much income they make, where they shop. I mean, it has, like, a lot of information in terms of, so again, looking at demographics. And so if we have a new housing track that maybe is in the South San Luis Obispo that just opened, again, we're making assumptions on who lives there, families might live there, what's it like. But, you know, is it more high school kids? Are these second homes for people? So we're not necessarily getting elementary kids, but you're getting more, you know, high school students, you know, maybe older families type of thing. So it does have that type of capability in terms of the data and being able to look at it. Now, you know, in terms of a new track, you know, I think they'll make some assumptions about, you know, who's going to move, the income levels, those types of things as they come. But it's probably the best science that we have to make decisions like that. But it was, again, out of the other products and all the things that we've seen in terms of really being able to look at demographics of a specific area, it was pretty critical. And if a school like Hawthorne is growing mm-hmm. too much, then we have some issues. Right. Because Hawthorne is relatively landlocked. Mm-hmm. I mean, in terms of population-wise, if of all of our schools that's going to have a difficult time growing, it would be Hawthorne. So right now we have Bishop's Peak that, you know, comes all the way to the district office in terms of boundaries. So, you know, those are things that I think it would be good for us to look at, and just to, you know, again, changing boundaries is a whole other story that in terms of, you know, diving into type of thing. But I think it is good for us to look at and kind of make those determinations and see where we're at.
Thank you. Mr. Millar?
Thank you. I emailed President Roger and Dr. Prater when I saw this item. And as gee whiz as clicking on parcels and getting all that information, that doesn't tell us anything about the future. That just tells us the status quo. My concern was the value of the forward-looking data, since we're going to have a sea change in this community. However, having reviewed it and looked at the costs, which I think are relatively modest in general, that we probably need the information for what it can do for us in the short term, recognizing that all bets may be off 4 or 5 years down the road as far as whether we're gaining enrollment or losing enrollment, those things. So notwithstanding those misgivings that I had a chance to share with Dr. Prater and Mrs. Roger, I think it's probably something we should move forward on. And I think the three-year approach gives us a chance to look at it 3 years later and decide what we do next. So.
And actually, you can. What they do is they lower the fee for the 3 years. So each year you do it, it's a little bit cheaper. You can opt out early. So we can opt out early if we decide to, and then you just have to pay the higher fee for that year. So which is kind of a nice feature that they, you know, I think they have enough confidence in their product that, hey, if you want to opt out, go for it. So it says a lot about them, I think, as well. So I think initially looking at it, seeing if it meets our need after even just this first year, is it something that really is giving us the value? We can make a decision about that and either decide to continue it or not.
Mr. Unger.
So just kind of to address your comments there for a second, Walt. I wish we could use any tool to see into the future more accurately than people saw in the future last week, because I think we wouldn't have been so disappointed in the results, or shocked by the results, I would say. And for the record, I shop at Ralph's, and I'll probably start shopping at the grocery discount center and Los Osos, so that if you want. But seriously, I'm excited about this because I think it's a flexible enough program that we'll be able to use it and tailor it to our needs, as opposed to the static demographic studies that we've had in the past. Also, I would say that on my tenure as a board member, tenure as a board member, I think one of the most difficult things we ever had to do was the redistricting. Clearly, redistricting was very difficult. We had the information we had. This was back in about 2001, and it was an excruciating process. And again, I would like to acknowledge Kathy Bonnet for her clever and insightful compromise on that. I don't know if you remember that. So I'm in favor of this, and I think we should approve it.
I think a couple of board goals, too, were to investigate, you know, in terms of looking at a potential bilingual program on the coast. We had talked about sixth grade at the middle school in San Luis. I mean, there's lots of different issues, too, where this could be something that could really be a tool for us to look and to, you know, what would that impact be? What would it look like in terms of where students are going? And, you know, if we took the population of Pacheco, our largest elementary school, and how many kids are on the coast? What's that look like? You know, it's just a good, I think it's going to be a good thing for us to use, but we'll see after a year and whether it fits our needs.
Mr. Buckman.
Thank you. So I've seen these in action before, and they're really, really are exciting. And when somebody can click on something and the whole district suddenly changes.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. I did have some questions about the contract. In one section, it talks about four things that are additional costs.
Mm-hmm.
And some of those additional cost areas seem like things that we really specifically and we're really specifically going to want. And so it looks like we almost have cost increases built in here. So, you know, Walter and all of us, I think, are agreeing that it seems like a fairly moderate cost to get started. Mm-hmm. but I'm worried about attendance area changes. As a part of the standard agreement, the district can modify attendance areas once a year, and this service is included in the base fee. If the district should require additional changes outside the normal cycle, extra money. And so those things that you're talking about, do we want to take the sixth grade over here? Do we want? I'm just a little worried about some of these hidden costs that may be in the contract.
And I think that's not necessary. So again, I think we can use the program itself, and they show you how to do it, they walk you through type of thing. I think if they have to physically go in and make technical modifications to things, that's the potential extra value cost that would come out of it. So, they were upfront in terms of, they actually will, they have a consultant that can come in and help you really break down your boundaries. And if the board decides, hey, we're gonna look at all of our schools and redraw them all and do some, again, which we're not saying we want to do, it's a whole different scenario, right? If that was a place we were going, but we have no interest at this point to go down that road.
Okay, and then there was early on, it talks about, we'll get started on your project in 3 to 4 weeks, and we'll put it in the work queue. And that sounded like maybe a way of saying, we really don't know when we're going to get started, and I don't know how long their queue is. And so
it just takes a while. We have to get them the data, all of our student data. So she said it takes about a month and a half to kind of get everything loaded into the system.
Okay, so that's what I was looking for, a little more specific date than getting in line.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right, thank you very much.
Sure.
I do think the three-year term makes sense because, we don't know. A company might open, a company might close. It might affect people who are attracted to the district, so the three-year trend would be good. Is there anyone who would like to bring a motion on accepting the services of Decision Insight? Mr. Quisenberry, seconded by Mr. Unger. So we have a motion to accept the enlist the services of Decision Insight to help us with our develop our demographic program. All in favor?
Aye.
And that's again unanimous. Thank you.
Okay.
Are you up again, Mr. Pinkerton?
I am.
Oh yes, you are. Stay right there.
Yeah, bring it home. Here we go.
Pinkerton show.
Exciting stuff. So the next one up is C.L. Smith, and so as part of our modernizations, there was a huge need at C.L. Smith to do a lot of work on that campus, as well as our other kind of main campus from the elementary standpoint was Bishop's Peak, which will be coming to the board kind of next, and we're moving forward. But C.L. Smith, a lot of improvements over last summer. Campus is really looking good. But the kind of the last kind of phase in kind of really fixing up that campus is to modernize the office area. So the project actually came in a lot cheaper than expected initially, because at first we talked about moving the walls out, making the entire office expansion bigger, those types of things. But by taking the space that was in the middle of the office, so they actually had kind of a courtyard in the middle of the office area, if you've been through the C.L. Smith office, and by moving some of the package units and heating HVAC up to the ceiling, it actually provided enough space within the walls of the building to be able to modernize it, bring it up to date, really make it kind of a good kind of, I think, the visual presentation of the school, right? So it comes along with a bus turnout. It comes along with some nice fencing across the front, which will, again, as we talk about security in campuses and those types of things. So it's just going to really kind of bring C.L. Smith to that final stage, and it'll look fantastic. And so the pictures and the DSA plans are presented to you tonight. So basically we're going to move this forward, take it to DSA with board approval to complete this project.
Is there anyone from the public who would like to comment on this matter? Seeing no one, I'll bring it to the board. Mrs. Sheffer.
As a C.L. Smith parent, I would like to move approval of the Measure D construction project for C.L. Smith. Mr. Millar, perhaps you'd like to second.
I too, C.L. We're not going to sing the Superstars song, but we're going to say Go Superstars.
Yes.
And I second.
Wonderful. We have a motion by Mrs. Sheffer and a second by Mr. Millar. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And again, that's unanimous. Are you still here?
So actually, Mr. Plaza was going to come up and talk to us a little bit about CEQA. So I will hand over the mic to him.
Thank you, Mr. Pinkerton.
Okay, good evening.
Good evening.
Now I'm a little nervous because usually the room clears when I come up here for the final event, so I've got an audience today. Anyway, so this evening we're bringing forward three categorical exemptions for three projects that are going to be coming up. CEQA is the California Environmental Quality Act, and so that's what you hear about, environmental impact reports and mitigated negative declarations, et cetera, et cetera. So on large-scale projects on a new bare patch of land, you would do a very comprehensive evaluation of the environmental impacts of that project on that site and the surrounding areas and the environment around it. On existing school campuses, they fall under what they call a categorical exemption. When you're not significantly increasing the student population on that campus. And so the two sort of litmus tests are 25% of the capacity or 10 classrooms. So the three projects that we're bringing forward tonight are the Bellevue Santa Fe relocatable classroom replacement, the C.L. Smith office expansion, and the Bishop's Peak multi-purpose room and office relocation, if you will, project. Because those three fall under that categorical or Rule 14 or Item 14 categorical exemption requirements. They're not increasing the student capacity by either 10 classrooms or 25%. The process we've been using is that we hired an environmental consulting firm, Firma, here in San Luis Obispo. They kind of did a preliminary evaluation of each of the sites to confirm that they could check all the boxes and say, yes, these projects indeed are categorically exempt. And then as part of that document, they reference back to our district's sort of self-adopted environmental controls procedures that the board adopted about a year ago when we did the same thing for San Luis Obispo High School's renovation. So while we're not necessarily required to follow every single thing that a mitigated negative declaration would require, we are kind of de facto doing that by imposing our own guidelines on that. So noise, dust, if we cut down some trees, we do nesting surveys to make sure no birds are impacted, we're not increasing traffic anywhere, so the traffic doesn't kind of fall into that. But all those things we would normally do, even though we're categorically exempt under a mitigated negative declaration, we're doing that anyway as part of our own processes. So it just allows us to not spend a lot of money, energy, and time on a full mitigated negative declaration, but we're still, moving forward with what we would normally do under that. We're just using the categorical exemption to move the project forward. So this evening what will happen is if the board finds these three projects categorically exempt, we will file that document with the county clerk recorder in the morning. It will get sent up to the state's clearinghouse. There'll be a 30-day sort of comment period. And at the end of 30 days, if no comments are received, then the action becomes final. If there are comments received, then we would have to evaluate that on a case-by-case basis and take the appropriate steps. But with that, we would look to probably approve these. Can we approve these as a group, Kim?
Is there anyone from the public who would like to speak to this matter? Seeing no one, Mr. Millar.
I just wanted to explain to the public why my eyes are not glazed over and my head is nodding like that. It's because of an excellent Measure D study session presentation by Ryan and Anthony that kind of helped us understand this. So if your eyes are glazing over, that's you didn't have the benefit of that. So with that, I would move approval of the CEQA exemptions presented in this item.
Second. We have a motion by Mr. Millar and a second by Mr. Quisenberry. All in favor?
Aye.
That motion passes.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you.
We are moving on to the action consent agenda. If you care to pull any of these items, please speak up. 10.01, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. 10.02, adopt districts' interests for CSEA negotiations.
10.03, accept CSEA negotiation interests. 10.04, adopt district interests for SEIU negotiations. 10.05, accept SEIU negotiation interests. 10.06, accept 2015-16 audit reports for San Luis Coastal Unified School District and CCSFA. And 10.07, approval of furniture and equipment requests.
I move approval of item 10.01 through item 10.07.
A motion by Mr. Unger, second by Mrs. Scheffer. All in favor?
Aye.
I think that's a first. Have we ever gotten through without pulling it? I don't think so. And moving on to the action items, we have 10.01. Advance agenda 10.02. Is there anything on advance agenda from anybody? Nope. And so we move on to 12.01, reports by board members. Mr. Unger.
So a couple of things I just want to bring attention to. First of all, I'd like to thank Food Services for the delicious dinner that we had tonight. We had homemade enchiladas with beans and apple crisp and a really wonderful salad with squash in it and craisins, I think,
yes,
right? And it was really, really good. And I understand that this is what's going to be on our cafeteria menu. So thank you very much. The second thing is I'd like to thank Mr. Palazzo for his leadership in the Central Coast Economic Forecast Conference. Several of us were there. Mrs. Scheffer was there. I believe Dr. Eisendrath, Mrs. Roger was there. Mr. Buckman was there. So I thought it was really a valuable thing, and I really wanted to thank you for it. Although, again, they were shocked, too, I think, by Tuesday night's results. Speaking of Tuesday night, I think it's. I just want to say I'm going to take just a minute to talk about that because I think what this tells me is how important the role of education is, and how important it is. Thank you. How important it is that we especially look at several things. First of all, the importance of civics and the importance of teaching children civics and the importance of civics engagement. Another thing I think we ought to be talking about a lot about is civility and the importance of having a civil society and a society that treats each other civilly. I think that's tremendously important. I think it's going to be real important as power devolves from the federal government for us to look at what it is we're doing and what we expect from our students. I, for one, am in favor of the Common Core because I think it teaches kids how to think. There are rumors that the next education secretary may not believe that. I think we have, and we heard tonight from Ms. Jones, the things we're doing in reading, the things I've seen us doing in math, I think we need to stay the course because I think it's in the best interest of our students. I think we need to teach our students about science, and especially the science of climate change. There are going to be climate change deniers. We owe it to our children and to our future to talk to our kids about that and to make sure they understand that the decisions we make today will affect thousands of years on this planet. We have a responsibility as school board members to make sure that these things are done, and I think we as a school board are committed to our students and committed to our community and the things that are going to make it better and right for our kids and for the future. And then I just would like to finish off with something that I did today. Today was National Philanthropy Day. And there was a luncheon at the Madonna Inn it was well attended. There were, I would say, a couple of hundred people there. And the adults that were honored were Bert and Candace Forbes. And, you know, the Forbes have given so much to our community. They talked specifically about the Forbes pipe organ, you know, everything else they've done. And Candy Forbes really, both Candy and Bert really gave nice speeches. But I'd like to talk just for a minute about what the Forbes have given to our district. So first of all, Bert gave service to our district as a school board member in the 90s, and I think we should recognize that. The second thing is Bert seeded the Teach Foundation with $100,000 back in 2000, and he also contributed money to Teach School. And I think we should recognize him for his philanthropy in our community and for specifically our school district. And then last year, I don't know if you all remember, but the youth philanthropy was won by a San Luis Obispo High School student. This year, I'm proud to say that it was won by five students from Morro Bay High School who are strong volunteers at Project Surf Camp, Hannah and Zoe Makowetsky, Violet Nava, Camille Sherrod, and Hattie Taylor. They are enthusiastic volunteers for Project Surf Camp, a project that I'm involved with it myself, that gets probably about 400 students, teaches them how to surf every summer, and gets them in the water. These are very handicapped students. Just a great thing. And they get hundreds of volunteers out to Morro Bay to really get in the water and be with the kids. So congratulations to our Morro Bay High School students for their philanthropy.
Mr. Unger, I just have to say that's the best campaign speech I've heard all season. Brought a tear to my eye, thank you. Mrs. Sheffer.
A couple of things. I'll add on to what, thank Chris for his remarks and also indicate that a lot of reading I've done recently has indicated that because changes at the top are not as positive as they should be in our government right now, that it's really more crucial than ever that people in local leadership positions of any kind involved in the schools, involved as we are on school board, other service organizations, that we individually and locally have to really make work harder than we ever have to bring our local communities along in order to lift up our local regions and then the state and then states around us and our country. So I would also indicate I want to thank Rick Mayfield and the adult ed and Dr. Prater for helping me on very short notice. A friend was visiting from London who is a specialist in early childhood issues in London, and she was over here and wanted to see what we're doing. So I took her to Pacheco to see the preschool and also the immersion program. She works closely with opportunities for parenting and the impact in Great Britain. And there are no immersion, there are only private schools are the only ones that offer immersion programs in Great Britain. So she was very interested to see what we're doing at Pacheco and asked a lot of great questions, and then we headed over to see parent participation. And again, tagging on to Chris's remarks a bit, when I was talking to Mr. Mayfield, he was talking about wanting to revamp the social studies program a bit to stress things like civic responsibility and the ability to listen to all points of views and actually be heard respectfully and have the opportunity to express views in a respectful manner and get any bullying out of the conversation. I also last week attended work with several other board members, Pacific Beach, to meet, and we never heard what happened. Was they were going through their process to become a model continuation high school, and the folks who were doing the came from Fresno to talk to the school and wanted to also talk with board members and staff and students. And it's always a great pleasure to have the opportunity to spend time at Pacific Beach and interact with the wonderful staff and students there. So that was my couple of weeks. And Dr. Prater, what happened?
We have yet to hear, but it sounded like a promising meeting. So I'm meeting with Principal Marinello tomorrow. Okay. So I'll learn more, and I'll make sure you get an update.
Mr. Buckman?
Thank you very much. So along with Ellen and Marilyn and Jim and Catherine, we were all at Pacific Beach. And it was quite a good discussion. I'm finding, as I'm out in the community, there's Diablo Canyon, and there's angst about it, and there's concern, but it also seems to be bringing the community together. And so when I talk to people, it's like, what can we do to help instead of, this is what's wrong with X program at this school. And I'm in some ways pretty encouraged about that and the almost the resilience of our community. And also just to tack on to the discussion of Tuesday night, and I liked the concept about listening. And I'm trying to look at a more, I tried to just take it as a more global picture. And I think one of the other things we need to teach is maybe empathy for those who are living with unemployment and poverty, not just in urban areas, but also in very rural areas, and getting to understand them, and then that goes to that concept of collaboration. And so thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Buckman. Mr. Quisenberry.
Yes, I just wanted to say this about Pacific Beach. It is a model continuation school, whether we get that accolade or not. It's wonderful. I know that every one of our board members appreciates the school for what it does, for the students it reaches, and it's tremendous success with students that have been challenged in their life and couldn't quite fulfill everything they needed to do at the comprehensive high school. They're able to go to Pacific Beach and do so, and I think that's just really wonderful. I did want to mention that I had the opportunity to stop by Morro Bay. It was a little early for this meeting, so I went by. I've actually this week have been checking the pool out too. I'm very anxious to get my feet wet in it. But I did, as going by Morro Bay High is always fun for me. It's just that I know fewer and fewer people, but I did want to mention some of the folks that I talked to. Don Rapucci, always a pleasure to see Don. He's now one of our senior people there. Steve Gady, also in the science department. I said, oh my gosh, he is. He's probably one of our most senior science teachers. These were all kids. Kyle Pruitt, Dr. Kyle Pruitt, I've seen practically grow up. But I wanted to mention Annette Bunnell, who's probably, I don't know, maybe the first number one booster of Morro Bay High School. I'll have to check that with Kim. But I had an interesting conversation with Chris Spar. Chris Spar teaches Spanish at Los Osos Middle School and at the high school, and we were talking about his vision and something that I have to share, which is having a Spanish continuum from the middle school through the high school, and also having that mesh with a Spanish for Spanish speakers, because it's an asset, and we need to consider it an asset, that these children come to us somewhat proficient in their own language, in another language. And so I'm so glad to talk with him, and it's a dream of his, and I kind of share it that somehow we're going to make something mesh there. So these kids can go on to Spanish AP and become bilingual and biliterate.
Excellent. I just want to explain why I'm wearing a safety pin around my neck. And that is, you may have seen others with safety pins pinned to their shirts or around their necks. And it's an identification for someone who wants to stand by you. So if you feel vulnerable, for whatever reason that might be this week or on any particular day, if you're someone who feels oppressed or even just left out, bullied perhaps, if you see someone with a safety pin around their neck or attached to their shirt, you know that person will stand by you, and you're safe. So I just wanted to share that with you, and I think that wraps it up for our evening. Thank you so much for staying with us throughout this entire meeting, and see you again. Bye-bye.